Hello and welcome to the last Tea with Nettie of the year. It's another family occasion today. The singing brothers, Guy and Hugh Cutting, respectively tenor and countertenor, who are the most effervescent duo you could imagine, consented to come to my hotel room and sit next to each other on the bed because the whole room was taken up with bed. And we had rather a hilarious time. I'm so sorry. There's a little bit of everybody talking at once. It was just sheer high spirits, I think. But I hope you'll get the gist. And we were all on tour together with Christmas Oratorio with Masaki Suzuki. And that was just towards the end of the tour. We had a brilliant time. And I wish you all a happy Christmas. So today I have Cutting Squared. I've got Guy and Hugh Cutting, and we're more or less at the end of a tour of the Christmas Oratorio, and it's been quite a tour with loads of travelling and every possible delay and cancellation, and we're still here and everyone's still smiling.
Still alive.
Yeah, still just alive. About. Just about. And we've ended up in my hotel room, which is basically bed, but it makes it very cosy. And, well, they're still chuckling, both of them.
The Chuckle Brothers. Oh, shut up.
No,
okay.
Already.
God, that's embarrassing. It didn't take very long, did it?
My editing skills aren't very good. You see, hysteria set in. And I look at you two and wonder what sort of household produced you two.
Yes.
Would you like to start, Hugh?
Absolutely. I'll turn immediately to Guy. So we have two musical parents. They're both instrumentalists. Mm. My dad's a baroque trumpet player of usual instruments as well. Mm. And our mum is a violinist. And they're definitely the biggest influences on our musical lives growing up. But also we were both choristers in Oxford. And there's a six-year age gap between us. And from my perspective... Actually, my first memory of seeing Guy being chorister was falling asleep immediately in the responses and waking up at the end after the anthem. But I think that was
about four.
Yeah, exactly. Even two, actually.
2 years old. Yeah.
Well, damaged for life. No.
You were lucky you fell asleep and didn't start yelling, really.
Yeah, exactly. The yelling came later.
Amusing time when I was a chorister at New College, but I also went back to New College as a choral scholar. And because of the age gap, there was 1 year where I was in the choir as a man, inverted commas, and Hugh was in the choir as a boy, so he had to call me Mr. Cutting. Just going back to our parents, the thing is our dad's dad is a jazz trumpet player.
Oh, yeah.
And our mum's dad did lots of jazz trombone as well, so we have, it's not just a classical influence.
Our dad did a bit of singing at university, but he's, as I said, a trumpet player. But yeah, I think the singing side of it really was the thing that, well, when I look at Guy, I feel like his singing is like an extension of being a musician rather than... Mm. Being a singer, if that makes sense. Mm. I think we're fairly similar. I think I'm probably more of a show off, more of an actor first
more
of all.
More of an operatic.
Yeah, and I think I came at it from that point of view. I think, whereas Guy was always playing the piano and a really lovely story about he was about 15. Instead of hanging out with his friends, he would cut the viola part out of a full score of the B minor Mass and stick it all together and play it over the summer.
That was
a low moment, sweet viola moment.
I tuned the strings of the violin down a fifth. So can you imagine the sound of the G string trying to play a C? It was like
a little bit teddy bearish. Yes. Oh, but how sweet!
It was pretty cool.
Was.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the viola more than the violin, actually.
Yes.
The finest string.
Yeah, finest. Just like the mellow aspect to it.
But being choristers, you say that there hadn't been voice, but maybe had your father or your grandfather had the chance to be choristers, they might have discovered that they were singers as well.
Yeah. I think our dad's. He certainly did some at the university, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the thing was our parents, they're both teachers as well, and our dad in particular works a lot in Oxford. I think he worked out from a pupil he had there was some kind of connection with this boy being a chorister, and our dad figured, oh, we could go to these posh schools and we could get a discount, basically.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Because we're a musician's family, we're not bankers, so it makes a big difference. And that was the reason, I think, that we came to know about it through our dad's teaching.
I see.
And the training we had, we were both at New College,
yes,
in Oxford,
mm-hmm,
and we had Edward Higginbotham for that.
Oh, yes.
Entire. Yeah, well, Hugh had 5 years and I had 8 years.
Right.
But the training was really, really excellent. And by the time you're 12 and you leave, you can certainly read everything.
Yes.
Just comes in pretty handy later on.
And Edward Higginbotham also, he was one of the first people to use period instrument,
yeah,
orchestras,
of course, yeah,
with his choir for his concerts, because
mm-hmm.
I remember
yeah.
going
yeah.
and playing for him a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was very into
French Baroque
it,
music,
mm.
so we did a lot of Couperin, Charpentier,
yes.
Lully,
yeah.
Rameau. We ended up with quite a... Yeah,
that a niche.
Quite
of
a
yes.
But we did a lot of Bach, actually.
Yes.
It's worth saying.
Yes.
The motet CD.
Yes.
And every year we did the John Passion, of course. I never did the Matthew Passion until I'd left university,
oh,
actually. So that was an interesting discovery.
Yes.
Terrifying when you first
Hard
went to the evangelist
yeah.
part.
Yeah.
I think this is a great
wow.
eye.
But maybe they couldn't afford two orchestras for the choir.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
And maybe like that. But you did Handel, didn't you?
Yeah,
did
yeah
you
we did. And lots of Messiah, of course.
Mm.
I think there were usually 3 tours a year.
Mm.
And the Christmas one was quite a big one. And we would go around Europe. I remember a particularly fun one going to Riga,
right.
Tallinn, like Barcelona,
mm.
lots
Wonderful.
Of France, and yeah, that was really fun.
And
yeah,
you were both there while you were doing this
for
touring.
1 year when we overlapped.
Only
when
one,
I was,
the 1 year.
Yeah, I was
yeah.
a chorus
scorer,
he was a chorus scorer.
Oh,
yeah.
okay, yes,
yeah.
because
yeah.
you two on tour when you were young, that would have been outrageous. Well, I mean, it's pretty outrageous.
And now it's just annoying, yeah. But I think those Messiah tours were particularly important. I mean, for me, certainly, because that was the first time I'd seen any solo singing really outside of a
mm.
choir context. And I remember that tour because it was Claire Booth, Yestin Davis, and James Gilchrist, of course.
Oh, Gilchrist.
I can't remember
oh,
the bassist,
right.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
But that was the moment that I actually knew that I really... I actually remember the day that it happened that I wanted to become a singer.
Mm.
And, you know, watching... those guys. It was a very amazing start to,
yeah.
and I think people can get very snooty for some reason about choral singing. Instead,
really?
You know, well, I says, well, people say, oh, are you a solo singer or are you a choral
oh,
singer? And I think it's a silly thing to get worked up about because
yeah.
the training you have as a little kid in that context. And I know lots of people you know, weren't Oxford choristers who did lots of singing when they were little,
mm.
and that made a big difference.
Oh, yes.
In all sorts of ways. So I think
mm.
it's a shame. The UK does have a great choral tradition.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a wonderful springboard for general musicianship and,
mm,
and how
definitely.
You listen and how you blend and everything.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
Yeah,
and not just music either. It's
everything.
How you think.
Yeah.
Mm.
It shows you how to think and how to...
Mm.
I don't know. I think the last thing I'll say about it is Higgy once said, everything about him, the thing that with children... often is that you don't get sort of exposed to an experience of an aesthetic kind
mm.
of beauty. I don't know, like seeing a dance show or
yes.
seeing a musical or whatever. And actually to be part of it when you're so young is pretty unusual.
Yes.
And it definitely, definitely changes
I think
you.
Edward's attention to detail in terms of things like just Baroque style and like phrasing and things like that, which it was basically just drilled into us age 8, and it's very much still there, I think. The way I do recits, I think it's just been in my head for a very long time, hearing people
yes.
like James, and he would do Our
yes.
Passions. And then I remember also hearing him doing Winter Words at the Hollywell Music Room and thinking,
right.
I want to do that.
I was about to ask you who
yeah.
your
yeah.
role models were
yeah.
as a tenor, because I'm
so
very interested in that.
Definitely James.
Mm.
I love Tony Rolfe Johnson's voice.
Yes.
I think he's...
yes.
He's actually my favourite, I think.
Mm.
I
think Guy's quite similar to him.
And John
Mark
Ainsley
mm.
as well.
Yes.
I really like
sort
those
of
sort of three.
Beauty.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I had a session with James probably about 5 years ago now, just on The Evangelist, and it was really, really helpful. Just a little tweak that
yes.
you can't come up with when you're 25 or whatever. You
no.
need you just need you need someone with experience to
yeah.
help you out. Yeah.
I did a lot of work with Tony Rolfe Johnson.
Okay.
In fact, we
yeah.
did lots of recordings with John Elliott. And the first time I actually talked to him, he told me that he had been a farmer in Crawley and he had 400 cows. And that was where he started from. I don't know if they were an inspiration. And then somehow his voice was discovered and he never looked back. And I don't know what happened to the cows, but isn't that an extraordinary thing?
They also became opera singers.
So. Maybe they're all really good tenors.
Oh, lovely cows.
But isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah, I love his recordings.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And then, Guy, sticking with you for the moment, we probably ought to try and get you talking one at a time so that it's not too confusing. Not that one can't hear the difference, but. But, Guy, at what stage did you start branching out and have to get an agent and things like that, or did that not happen overnight?
Yeah, so initially I did a lot of consort singing and lots of choir singing. I remember singing to David Clegg when I was still at New College, and he initially fixed me into various things like the Gabrielli consort and that sort of thing. And then I got a bit of a break in Holland, just doing some passions with a group called Nieuwe Philharmonie Utrecht. And I went over there and did some evangelist, some concerts over there. And then from there, I started picking up a bit more solo work also in the Netherlands. My agent now is Caroline Phillips, and she found out about me somehow and madly decided to email me. But I did a lot of like the Talis Scholars and those sorts of Renaissance groups. And then I kind of gradually started doing more solo things, and then eventually it was just solo.
I see.
So I did a lot of consort singing to start with, which actually also was very, very helpful for just general training and things.
I'm sure it was, and that goes on from what you were saying, Hugh, about
coming from that sort of
foundation
choral
of coming
basically.
From a choral background. And certainly, as far as we're concerned, when you get people that listen so well, that can sight read, that can transpose, that can do anything, it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's a very different scene to how it used to be when repetiteurs used to din things into people note by note. And they weren't so concerned with what was going on as an accompaniment.
Voice
beautiful. It's very different now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
there's certainly, pros and cons to both, I guess, in a way, because with that more traditional, non-music-based kind of teaching, as it were, the stereotype, I suppose, is that you're more able to feel the voice like working correctly instead of trying to think about the notes, and it might make you more fluid. But these are kind of stereotypes, I think, and most people who work in early music certainly have a good mix of those things, because we're no longer in the early days of historical performance, so it's that the times have changed quite a lot, perhaps.
They have, and there's a lot of contemporary music written for the countertenor, for instance, and people like James Bowman and Michael Chance did Blazing Trail for that sort of thing, didn't they?
Of course.
But what you were just saying about, well, maybe if you were trained more conventionally, you're more aware of your voice, but paradoxically, it could be you both sound so natural because you've never got hung up or self-conscious about it, or actually had to think about how you do it. Maybe that's a better way to be. I don't know.
Yeah,
as a viola player, I don't know.
Oh, the finest string, I say. No, I think, I certainly have. I've definitely got in my head, as everyone has, presumably, about technique, and especially nowadays when we have so much recording and the way things are recorded makes such a big difference to how you perceive yourself and your voice. And with each different repertoire, you have to rethink, how am I going to approach this? Not in a kind of false way, but you have to be part of the world of the music that's happening around you. And especially with Bach, I find myself having to think about that a lot. I suppose when we were growing up, Guy and I were very into musical theatre particularly, and our mum plays in a lot of shows, and our dad as well, but particularly our mum has a kind of passion for that. And
sitting in the pit with them playing in the pit, and that, just getting immersed in all of those, especially the older musicals like My Fair Lady and The King and I, South Pacific and all of those sorts of things.
But I think
that was actually quite a big part of our upbringing. Along with Barbara Streisand.
Well, I said this before, and I want to think.
Our mum,
she's a mixture of Barbara Streisand and Bridget Jones.
Oh, really?
If you ever meet her, I'm sure you will.
She's got the best bits of both,
and the difficult bits of both. But I think, but that thing about music theatre is that it's very direct.
The
expression is very direct, so it means that
you're not
faffing
things
around.
To the audience, like straight away, you know.
It's
quite real, I suppose.
It's all right. Well, it's in Baroque, you have these da capo arias, which you go back over singing the same text over and over again, and it's not necessarily the most natural way of speaking. You're not going to say over again and over again a billion times. So, but I think that directness is that's always been essential. I think a central thing of what we try to go for. Maybe I say we as if we're a two-headed monster. Basically, are so. But the music theatre side is.
Yes. Well, actually, what I've found with both of you, and I'm just going to address Guy again now. Guy, what I find is that very virtuous aria you have with the flute, that you go in and out of this unbelievable coloratura, and then you just ease effortlessly back into your syncopation, and your sense of rhythm is exceptionally good, I would say, in my experience. So, I mean, of course, both of you I'm talking about, but that aria in particular, we just couldn't believe it the first rehearsal. Our jaws were dropping. I've never heard it done so far.
I think that's one of those arias that if you think about it too much, it probably doesn't work.
Okay, I better not make you think about it.
That'd be all right. It's a really...
It is quite something, and it's quite a physical thing, isn't it, that you have to do. You know, I noticed that you're using your
friend
head
who came
well,
yesterday said it looked like I was being electrocuted.
So that's technique.
That's exactly what I was going for. Yeah,
it is a bit like.
But you're right. I understand what you mean about having to come in and out of
in and out of that, and then you
try and look calm.
Yes,
somehow at the end.
But
of
you
it.
Do, but it is it is incredible that and both of you and also the way you can go from being with a real swing and then go into sort of something very cantabile and I
the
think
rhythm based sometimes
and Suzuki I mean Mr. S- no help
Maestro
Lord
Maestro
King,
Suzuki
yeah.
Sama
Wizard.
Yes he I mean he really is he is very demanding. He has a particular approach to getting us to play rhythmically, and it's really interesting for us to be asked not to head towards each bar line, just to almost contain the upbeat on this side of the bar line so that it doesn't fall forward. Even if he's asking Adrian, our timpanist, to crescendo into something, he never wants it to lose its poise. Although, having said that, some of his tempi are quite brisk, aren't they?
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
But he never wants it to feel pushed. He always wants it to feel really...
There's always space, even if it's a quick tempo. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes it's that little wait just before the beginning of the bar.
Oh, yes.
I find, like, I feel like it's like, ooh.
It's
but it gives it space, which is quite important. And it's definitely, rhythm is obviously a priority for him. I think
it does seem to
his,
be, yes. Because this is the first time for me doing bar with him, and I've heard his recordings, but it's very interesting. I find him such a mass of contradictions, you know, because he can be quite insistent, can't he? And he has his ideas, and then he'll suddenly do this giggle, which makes it sort of feel sort of, oh well. And he doesn't take it personally if anything goes wrong. He sort of moves on, doesn't he? But as long as we're all really going for the same thing, I'm enjoying.
He's lovely.
Very much. He is.
He's very. I think he's very secure in himself, which makes it. Big difference.
It does
and
seem
he
to be that
he's very
way.
Sure of his ideas as well,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
But also he conveys, he gives exactly the right amount of information, I find. There's enough to work on, but it's not an overload at the same time, which is really helpful as a singer. You've got a couple of points to work on.
Yes.
Yeah.
In whatever it is. And then it's exactly the right amount, I think. It's really good.
He's got a sense of the big picture in a world full of recordings and studio albums, and when performances change between gigs. That's way more interesting than going for absolute precision. Or I mean, he's very precise, but you see what I mean? It's a difference.
Different mindset.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And he always says, let's enjoy the concert at the end of the rehearsal. I think he's said that for every single concert
sure
so far,
enjoying
which
it,
is
exactly.
not the way that some people
end
up themselves.
But he studied with Tom Copeman, and he always used to say the same thing. But the other thing, I get a real sense that he is actually grounded in religion, and the words are so important to him, aren't they? I mean, he's very insistent upon the words, and that we understand what we're singing and playing about.
Yes, he is. And at the same time, he's not insisting for the sake of the words.
No.
It's not about pronunciation, it's actually about,
it's
the
about
spirit
the
of the words.
And
that sounds like a simple thing to aim for, but actually when you're doing a tour where everyone's absolutely knackered from a 13-hour train journey, as we had yesterday, those things happen. You have to say things again we were in Cologne, and a couple of us were saying, oh, it's a shame, you know, we can't be going to the Christmas market. but then you remember you're doing Christmas by doing it. And it's important to remember the ritual of that.
And that Cologne day was a particularly testing day because we'd left the hotel at 6:20 in the morning, hadn't we, in the snow. And that was the one time we were performing all six cantatas in one show.
Yeah.
And the train was delayed. I mean, everything that could have happened that went wrong. And everyone was so good-humoured about it.
Yeah.
And that you not only have to sing your solos, but you have to sing everything else as well in the chorus and then step up. And your choreography, actually, where you sing your solos from has been different practically every time according to the acoustic or the layout. And there we were on this delayed train. And we started off with a bus ride to Ulm in order to get the train.
Yes,
that's
right.
What happened. So it was the bus driver couldn't come to the hotel, so we had to walk through the snow to where the bus was. And then we got on the bus, and then we got to the station, and then there was a train.
And then Deutsche Bahn was 2 hours late.
I think we had three or four problems
in the same journey.
And I think, was that the one where there was no hot food, there was no restaurant car or something?
Yeah.
So people who'd been breakfast bandits had some sandwiches, and a lot of people just had nothing really to eat.
Breakfast
bandits?
Yes.
Have you not heard of that?
I've heard that.
People who surreptitiously sort of whop some ham in a roll and pied it in a napkin.
Yeah, that was a Florian.
Yes.
He did that. Yeah.
Yes.
I think I did.
But anyway, it was a very, very long day. And then we could see that we weren't going to make the rehearsal time, and then I think Crispin was having to contact Masaki and say, oh, well, we're going to be another hour late or something. And in the end, we had hardly any rehearsal time. But the brilliant thing about Cologne is that they look after visiting orchestras as well as their own. And we got there, and there was some soup, and it made such a difference, didn't it? And of course, they always have beer for us at the end. That was one of our best concerts, I thought, completely packed, wasn't it? Absolutely packed. And the audience was so responsive. And of course, Masaki keeps saying you can really tell when you're in a German-speaking country.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're hanging on your every word.
Yeah.
And that, it was a wonderful concert.
That was a wonderful concert.
And I
it
thought,
six,
if the audience just knew how you'd spent your day...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it was... That was... I mean, that one, because we did all six parts, particularly... I mean, Guy was. It was a particularly funny situation with Guy because he was both evangelising and doing the solos, of course,
and the chorus,
and right at the end, the last kind of 20 minutes of the whole piece is basically just the tenor evangelising and then doing the solos.
It's a little bit embarrassing.
And
it
was
stood there for
standing
half
in the
an
same
hour,
place
and people
delivering
and
this stuff
watching
to people.
Wide eyed, like, how the hell is he surviving this ridiculous marathon? But.
Yes.
He's a machine.
I had to employ the sort of just taking it one by one that day, you know, just like, okay, this recit, and then
in
we've got
the
this
now.
One, then we've got this aria. Okay, end of the first part, right, what's next? It's like, because I think if you approach it, if you see the whole thing in one go, you probably will just expire.
Feel faint,
yeah,
yeah. No, but it's it was terribly impressive.
Yeah, but you're right, it was a really good concert that day, actually.
It was a really good
somehow,
concert. But
it felt like we just had to go for it. There was no other option.
Absolutely.
It had to be just...
But then the next day we had an early flight, and that had its dramas because we'd bought two seats for the cellos, and then British Airways had managed to sell them again and tried to turf the cellos off. And it was quite stressful for everybody, you know, were we going to get to London or not? And we did in the end. But then we had to do a concert in London on that night and the following night, and then we had to fly out again.
Yeah.
Have you had schedules like this before? Like, is extreme, or is this quite an extreme
one? We have, but I think the reason this feels more extreme is because the travel had obviously been planned incredibly carefully by the OAE office. I mean, they really had put their heart and soul into it. But in the end, who could have predicted that Deutsche Bahn would have been in such a mess? Everything went wrong.
Yeah.
And how could we have known about the flights? You know, so we were stymied at every turn. I mean, I don't think we've had a single day where everything's
gone smoothly. Well, finally,
today,
we had the travel from Paris to Brussels.
That was great.
On time.
That
amazing.
Was on time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was amazing.
It has been a Monty Python.
It has been a Monty Python.
Series.
And everyone has been in such a good mood about it and made the best of it and played silly games and there was a raspberry incident with your girlfriend Rebecca.
A raspberry incident.
Well, a raspberry incident in that there was some raspberries on the rack overhead and the train didn't emergency stop and it was suddenly raining raspberries all over.
Oh Oh, God. Yes.
Yes.
That sounded more extreme than...
I know. Sorry, that's
it's
good. Not in any way relevant to what I'm meant to be talking to you about. So
not
I shall swerve back onto things that I should be talking about and asking you. Okay, so Hugh... So you're the more operatic one, aren't you? In sort of every way, I would say. And
just look at him.
Yes. Oh. And and what sort of operatic roles are you drawn to?
Yeah, well, all of it, really. I mean, all the stuff for an alto countertenor, I suppose, rather than a sopranist. So all the Handel stuff.
Britain.
Oh, well, obviously, Oberon is the definitely the dream.
Have you done Oberon?
No, I haven't done it. I've never sung it, actually. I'm doing it in recital, actually, at some point coming up. But it'll happen at some point, I guess. But no, I love Written on Skin. And I'm lucky enough to do that next year.
By George Benjamin.
Yeah, and I think he conducts a lot of those performances of his own stuff. So that'll be very, very cool. But no, I mean, to be honest, I said before, I've always loved acting and being on stage and... I think I've played a genie in the Nativity once. And I'm not sure there was a genie.
Really?
At the birth of Christ. Yeah. Maybe it was a sort of Aladdin ripoff. Anyway, whatever. I think from that point on, I just love being on stage. But I think more than anything, I do just love the thing of singing to make people listen and be moved, I guess. And opera is the most complete version of that, I guess. But I love recital as well. I mean, recital is actually might even be... more of a favourite than opera for me, because it's quite a test, I guess. And we both grew up doing lots of sport and stuff like that, and the physical dimension of singing is definitely something that I think about a lot, and the guys the same. And so there's something about being in a recital and it just being you and a piano or a lute or whatever.
It's very freeing.
Well, yes, it is very freeing, but I find it the hardest thing to do by far, and therefore I'm drawn to it the most, because I want to practice how good it can be or how bad it can be, and I still get away with it. But I guess recital for me is really the biggest test, I suppose.
And you can see the audience faces sometimes, can't you, when you're actually singing out then. You probably like seeing reactions.
I've had a few strange reactions to my singing, which is, I was once giving a recital sounds very grand. I think I was just singing as part of a broader recital and with lots of more normal voices, lovely baritones and sopranos and stuff. And then I came and started singing some sort of niche song by, I don't know, Peter Warlock or something.
Yes.
And a guy in the front row just sits up and goes, "Not for me," and walks out. And
not for me.
Oh, no.
And you know what? I thought, that's fair enough, mate. Just
good on it.
Do what you know. You listen to what you like. So I think since then, actually, I've been sort of oddly fearless in terms of how people will react.
It's
funny
with the couch tenor
voice, how it can be received. Like,
it's a weird thing.
Doing some school workshops. Stop talking, Hugh. I'm doing some school workshops and. I just remember the countertenor in the group, just the moment he started singing, just all the children just started laughing.
Oh,
because they just
so
never
unexpected.
Heard. They just never heard a man talking of him before.
No. It is a weird thing.
It is a weird thing. And I have to ask at this stage, Guy, how was it growing up with this extrovert younger brother?
I have so many memories and stories. I particularly remember Hugh. We were in Italy. He was obsessed with Gandalf from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, really?
He wouldn't be.
He was also obsessed with the responses at a similar level of interest. So I remember him sort of, he had a staff and he would bang it in the ground. They go, "Oh Lord, open thy lips. You shall not pass. I'm the Holy Ghost." And with a kind of cloak and everything. So he's always been a bit of a stagey boy.
And our dad also is really into weird humour and weird things happening. So he was basically filming this as a home video and be like, do it again, because it's so weird.
It was very strange.
But you definitely had your moments as well.
Did you? What sort of moments did you have?
Well, I've already mentioned the B minor mass cutting out the viola part.
That's just
weird. Yeah. Well, we used to make make weird... like documentary films together.
Did you?
Which was, let's not go, well, I think we actually, oh God, we were both very nerdy and obsessed with things, and I think it was the fourth Harry Potter film that we just knew the script of so close. This is so sad, isn't it? We knew so closely, so we decided to make our own version of the film, but with just the two of us.
Yeah, on my old
on your
Nokia
first phone.
Yeah. 3310
oh,
or
really?
Something.
Really? And were you acting all the parts?
Yeah. And the best aspect of that is that if we didn't find a way of filming it ourselves, I just filmed the TV. I just filmed the film. So it would cut from the two of us. And
to a pirated version of the film.
Oh, there's Viggo Mortensen. Oh, no, sorry, that's Lord of the Rings.
So there's
Daniel Radcliffe. Right?
Guy, can you tell me, how was the casting? Who decided in the first place?
I think
on
I just
casting?
Decided everything because I was 6 years older.
Okay, so who are you?
Gosh, that's probably...
Who was Hermione, for instance?
I was definitely Hermione.
Who was Hermione? Yeah.
I'm proud of it, so...
I think you probably try to be every character, I suspect.
Mm. It was a strange summer, yeah.
This phone still exists at our parents' house, but we can't get into it.
Oh,
so
what
we
a
can't
pity.
Access this...
If anyone listening has a charger for a Sony Ericsson from 2008...
Oh, yes. Is it Sony Ericsson? It's that orange, orange phone. Yeah, yeah. One day we'll get in there.
Oh, I hope someone does
we'll,
come up with that.
I'm
you
very
must be able to get it on eBay or something.
For
you look for one.
It's very... We
should look for it.
You should look
right,
for it. Oh,
right.
I mean, that would be amazing. That'll be worth thousands.
I think our age gap was really good, though, because it meant that we'd never... I don't think we would have anyway, perhaps, but also because we're different voice parts and 6 years apart.
Yes, that was lucky.
It's never been a...
competition
and also but yeah, yeah I think we are different enough for it to not really
I think
be
as performers we're quite different as well I think
but
it's good we don't want to kill each other
but Guy you were telling a funny story. I mean, it's funny to me, you don't look alike, but to some people they get you really muddled up. And you told me when you arrived, we're doing this in this hotel room, and you've just given them maid a heart
There's
attack.
There's been a couple of funny
what
things.
Just explain
so
what happened.
The first funny moment was in Bregenz in Austria.
Yes.
Where most people on this trip, the audience, have been coming up and saying, "Are you cousins or are you brothers?" Yeah, obviously. One, we had, "Are you married?" Which is an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, quite strange, but I think slightly too similar.
Because like
for that
is attracted to like. It's not, yes.
And the other one, just this morning in Paris.
Yes.
The cleaner like knocked on my room.
Yes.
Came in, and then she just looked absolutely petrified, just terrified. And I was like, okay, sorry, do I look that awful? What's going on? And then I realised that she'd just been up in Hugh's room on the floor above.
Yes.
And had come down, the next room she'd gone into was my room.
Yes,
and she thought she'd just been a sort of time lapse or something. And she'd just ended up seeing the same person on the floor below. And I was like, no, c'est mon frère.
It's funny though, because we obviously do look... I mean, we have different hair and stuff like that.
Yes.
But I guess we have a similar... sort of
I think
stern,
our mannerisms
brown.
Are probably quite similar.
Yeah.
And also probably our voices are quite similar, which is probably very confusing for this.
Yes,
this little,
but one of you talks more than the other. But your eyes are sort of quite similar in a way.
Got your mother's eyes.
Harry? No. yes.
I think our mum is quite proud. I think she thinks that we have her eyes.
Oh, I see.
It's one of those things that we have to remind her that is definitely the case.
Yeah, yes. I think Guy looks more like our dad, and I look more like our mum, perhaps.
Yes, I saw your parents for the first time the other day at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. Yes,
they came to both.
They must be so proud all the time, I would imagine.
I hope so.
Yes. But maybe they don't tell you too much.
They're so busy, they teach every day of the week, and then they have concerts at the weekends and things, so they are super busy. But yeah, I think they're happy.
Well, I mean, they're certainly happy, but it's more that because they're musicians, they've never been pushy, but they obviously are in the same industry as us, so I think they would have been proud if we'd done anything, really, as any parent should be. But I think it's more that they just see what we have wanted to do, and when it's come to pass, it's been of, we know you wanted this. I always ask my parents for feedback on stuff, because I think especially nowadays with all the kind of social media fake hype and real hype, you know, in all its guises, it's good to have people that you trust to actually tell you if you're being good or if you're just being an idiot.
The other thing I find with our dad especially is that he always praises you if something's gone really well, but there's always the suggestion of what could be the next thing to achieve as well,
because
it could be quite easy just to be like, great, you know, it's good. He's just always keen for us to keep going.
But it's wonderful that you've got a good enough relationship with your parents that have this and with each other. I mean, it's really lovely to see you getting on so well. You know, just putting your arms around each other at the end of the show yesterday. It's lovely.
Touching me.
Is that what you were doing?
Touching me. Very cheeky. Yeah, look, watch tomorrow. Well, he won't do it.
It has felt quite weird when we've been at the end bowing together, because it feels like we're just at home playing through Wicked or something on the piano. I don't know, it's slightly surreal.
Yes.
But
how often do you get the chance to tour together? It can't happen that much nowadays.
It hasn't happened much until, just about now it's starting to happen a bit more.
Because it's Christmas, or you mean in general?
Just generally. Maybe it's partly to do with the age gap, and we've also been doing slightly different types of work.
Yes.
But we're getting more and more together, which is great. We have a Messiah, actually, just after this together.
Oh, have you? Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also want to work together more. Mm-hmm. And a counsellor-tenor combo is interesting.
Mm.
And especially because we're so similar physiologically. Is that a word? Physiology, yeah.
Mm.
We do have a kind of a natural, without trying, blend. We just sound quite similar in certain parts of the voice, even though we're two.
We were doing Zing It in this programme.
Yes.
And there are some sections in that middle part, which is solo voices, where I think if we're in thirds in a certain area, kind of between a middle C and a G, it basically just sounds like the same voice.
Oh,
it's very weird.
Amazing,
As our registers are mixing, kind of, in it. And you start, it's almost like the same voice, yeah.
Mm.
But on that, we're cooking up some joint recital programmes.
Great.
Because that would be a thing. We need to do Abraham and Isaac. And,
you do, of course, don't you?
Other things like that. So that's going to be...
6 years.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Very young father.
Yeah. Yeah.
Papa?
Yeah. I think it should be quite fun.
And the other thing, of course, you never even have to think about ensemble, whether you're going to be together or not. It just happens, doesn't it? Because I get that with my brother and sister.
Yeah,
and
sure,
you know, you can spontaneously start out of nowhere at exactly the same time in the same
exactly.
key. Yes.
Yeah.
That
cuts out a whole lot of anxiety, I would imagine.
Yes.
We changed the style of something exactly in the same way at the same time without actually planning it. Like that Nur Steif und Fest thing.
Yeah, but
I suddenly go choppy.
Oh, right.
Well,
yeah.
Unplanned.
Spontaneously,
it just
happens.
It's quite
weird.
I think a lot of siblings have that in the end. And not just in
music.
Yeah,
it's a natural...
Not just in music, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe with anything,
there's sort of weird telepathy going on.
Well, it's hardly surprising.
Yeah.
And, I suppose I shouldn't be keeping you too long, but I did... it'd be very interesting to find out from each of you what you imagine, what you would like to think you'd be doing in about 5 years' time, even in about 10 years' time, or is that tempting fate?
Yeah. Go on, you go first.
I don't know, you go
younger
first.
Brother.
Hugo first.
Well, I don't know, just more of the same, I guess. More of, keeping a nice mixed career with lots of opera recital in oratorio. I'd love to sort of maybe push an idea for an opera I have with a composer friend of mine. Who knows how operas get made and stuff like that, and how anything gets funded. But that's a kind of pet project of mine, which will probably take a lot longer than 5 years to come to fruition. But I think as I've grown up and watched Guy, I suppose the thing I've always seen every couple of years is how he keeps a very balanced sense of himself and lifestyle as well, with his family and work and the relationship between all those things.
Mm.
So I think it's not a sort of specific music related thing, but I would like to keep that sense of balance in my head about how I'm going to be, especially because I think for counsellors, I mean, there are more of us now. More of us. Sounds like a horrible
creatures.
Yeah. But I think because it's traditionally been a younger man's game, you start earlier, I think it's quite easy to become complacent at a certain point because you're able to pick up your career quite quickly. Really don't I just want to be very careful about that, really. I'm not trying to be overly virtuous about it. I just think that for me it's true that the real joy comes from self-realization and how you're going through your career and making sure you're doing it for good reasons and that will make you happy. So I guess just that, really.
That's a very balanced reply.
Too balanced. Too balanced!
No, great.
The balance thing is also really important to me, that I do actually love being at home as well.
Yes.
And making sure I... Yeah. not away too much. But at the same time, I want to continue on with career. And I have some. So I haven't done that much opera so far. However, there are some potential kind of openings coming up in a couple of years' time. So it's going to be interesting to see how.
Is that exciting for you? You're interested to see how.
See how that all goes. And yeah, trying to build up a bit more of the recital side as well. I did bits of Wenlock Edge recently for the first time, which I absolutely loved. Some more Britten, Vaughan Williams, that sort of repertoire with orchestra as my voice keeps growing. Mm. That would be great. But also, I'm always going to want to sing Bach and Handel and other Baroque, the Baroque guys, because it feels like it fits quite nicely.
Yes.
So just keep developing that
the
size.
Balance. It must be difficult to know what to turn down. I know you've just got two new cats and you're sad to be missing their development, aren't you?
She got two cats and then immediately went on tour. So
yes, that's
left my wife with them, which is a bit mean, but it's all right.
Yes. She's relieved.
She's very relieved I'm not there.
Oh, it must be so difficult, and you have to trust your agent to not take on things that might be too much.
I find she will never put me into a situation which I can't cope
That's
with.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but at the same time, she wants to keep pushing me, so it's a good situation.
Yes,
yeah,
we have an interesting sort of feedback loop going on as well. I guess the two of us, because as I'm sure you know, sibling musicians have. Because we both know each other so closely, and we are very close as a pair. We're not very English in that respect, maybe.
No.
We trust each other to tell when you're being fake on stage, or if you're doing something which sounds... I think going forward, that will be very important, because if you have people that you trust... Yes, Guy's a person who that is a big... function of him to me as well, and keep
you in check,
and also because you know that he knows what you would like, how you want to come over,
because you're
on the same wavelength.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I often I'll know what you're trying to. I can sort of read your mind sometimes when you're actually performing. I can sense what he's going for.
Yes,
just based on the sound and how you're kind of looking, because you do the same mannerisms as me.
Yes. But you have to be able to experiment, don't you?
Yeah.
But good to know if something's worked or if it hasn't quite, or whether it's worth persevering with or no.
We can trust each other to be honest
really
about
nice.
That sort of thing.
Oh, well, that's a great way to end. Thank you so much for coming.
Right.
It's really been lovely to hear
it's
you.
It's been really
and,
lovely, thanks.
Thank
not
you
just
very
your
much.
Singing, but actually talking.
Yeah.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Nettie.
Thank you, Nettie.
Woo.
Good night.